Chapter 7 Desolation. He did not stay for her funeral, Selene sighed. They all of them gathered, there in the ruins of Neve's city, all save for him. The Highlanders poured out like red water on the ground and wondering what the hell it had all been for. Lachlan na Craig and the ragged remnants of the Silver Sorority, mourning the Grail and their fallen brethren both. Other than Gabriel's old prentice, not a single Silver Saint was found alive after the battle. The prisoners Dior had saved, crawling up from the basements of Oldtoon in disbelief. The thralls she had liberated, bruised and battered and never given a chance to thank her. A few children were discovered beneath the rags and frozen corpses in those awful cages in the Bailey. A handful, spared by the slender mercy of Aaron DeCoste during that dreadful final hour. Little Mila was found among them, standing in the snow with her Moppet doll and her bloody dress and bewilderment in her two old eyes. Rain had found young Joaquin Marin, wandering the ruins with his hound, Elena, calling for his dear Isla, searching for his ever after. To this day we know not if the princess told him the whole truth. She was laid in state in the ruins of Amath du Miardar, the sepulchre of the Mother Maid, where all came to pay her tribute. Rain had dressed her as she'd vowed to that night they spoke in the crypt, garb that suited the Grail better than any silk stolen from an ancien's den, any finery from a princess's wardrobe. A suit of shining plate mail and threefold chain, and a long blade of Ossian steel to match. Her long ashen hair had been washed and combed, arrayed in a pale halo around her head, her hands crossed at her breast. Her right was enclosed in a gauntlet, but her left was laid bare, so all could see the hurt she had suffered for their sakes, only a mangled forefinger and thumb remaining. The Red Hand of God, some named her. La Demoiselle du Graal. But more, and most, the whisper that became a cry, that became a hymn, as they gathered there on the ruined steps of that mighty chapel, was a simple one and true. San Dior, they called her. San Dior. The heavens rang in reply as they sang that name, dark and furious and heavy as lead. There was no joy in this parting, only loss, and in truth, none of us knew what now to do. Aaron DeCoste stood watching the funeral rites from atop a distant wall, his beloved Baptiste beside him, and all the awful things he had done hanging between them like a shadow that wore the face of Nikita Divok. Phoebe Adunzer spoke the eulogy, sang Dior's honours to her people and the howling sky. But her heart was torn so deep she was near a ghost, and the blighted blood ran still within her and all her kin, and back in her tent, wrapped in a bloody shroud, another beloved waited to be buried. And Gabriel was there for none of it. We know not when he left, nor if he told any farewell. We know only when we went to look for him, we could find no sign, and his brave Argent was missing from among the Highlanders' horses. We thought for the longest time about chasing after him. The last Laethi shook her head and scoffed. And then I thought the better of it. For my part, I could not bear to be there when they buried her. When Lachlan na Craig dragged back the mighty silvered lid of the Mother Maid's empty coffin and laid her inside it, there to be forever guarded by those seraphim and their silvered swords. We sat below, far down in the vault of Marin's tomb, waist deep in bloody water, bloody tears spilling down our face. The hymns of the Silver Sorority sounded a dirge to me. All the prayers and names rang hollow. Saint, Maiden of the Grail, Red Hand of God. In the end, she had been a girl I cared for. A girl I had failed. A girl with a name that we whispered there in that awful dark, with heaven glowering above us and hell yawning below. Dior. Cared for? The words were spat, not spoken. Gabriel rising up now from that dark shoreline, swaying on his feet, His eyes burned with drunken fury, his fists clenched tight. Cared for? Selene flinched as he hurled his empty bottle, the glass smashing to 100 glittering shards on her silver mask, her marbled skin. You never gave a shit about anyone but yourself. With a roar, at last, Gabriel threw himself across the river, long black hair streaming behind, mouth open in a hateful snarl. He cleared those dark waters before Jean-Francois had a chance to shout, crashing into his sister and bringing her down to the stone. Fists balled, bellowing with rage, he struck her across the face, once, twice, so vicious and fierce the metal cage on her lips dented, then snapped free with a scream of tortured metal. She was on him then, the pair smashing each other into the floor, up into the ceiling, twin shadows and twin flames clawing and tearing each other in their hatred. Unable to follow the Silver Saint over the river, the Marquis could only bellow for Delphine, the Capitaine, and his thrall swords crying aloud, leaping out into the chest-deep flow and wading across while the siblings clashed. The last Laethi and the last Silver Saint were like children brawling, punching and kicking, gouging and spitting. But finally, Selene sank her teeth into Gabriel's throat, blood spraying, flowing, swallowing, lashes fluttering and breath whispering and lips curling until the swords arrived, stabbing at Selene with their burning brands, so that she was forced off, shrieking her fear of the flames and flashing back into the darkest corner she could find. Jean-Francois could see little of her face behind the curtain of long black hair and blood, save her eyes, wide and bright with terror. "Do not kill her," he roared. "Bring the saint back now." The soldiers complied, helping a bleeding, drunken Gabriel to his feet, one hand pressed to his torn throat. But as he spied his sister, cowering in the shadows, he snapped to, lunged for her again, only stopped by Delphine and five of his largest men. "Lying bitch! Faithless coward! I'll see you dead, I vow it," he roared, bucking in their arms as they dragged him back. "You hear me, Selene? I swear to God above and hell below, I will tell them everything I know about you and yours just for the joy of watching you burn." "So steep your price?" she shouted, spitting his blood on the floor and looking to Jean-Francois. "Oh, be not fooled, little Marquis. My brother would sell you the keys to heaven itself for a bottle to drown in and a whore to drink." "Die!" Gabriel roared, reaching out toward her as they dragged him up the rocky shore. "Just step into this river, Selene, and wash yourself away. That's all you're good for. That's all you're worth. You're the fucking last of them all, so just end it and be done." "I will never be done. I am stone, do you hear me? I am the mountain." "Get him out of here," Jean-Francois bellowed. "Get him gone."
Gabriel flailed, breaking one thrall's arm and another's jaw before they bludgeoned him into compliance. Bloodied, soaked through with wine, the last Silver Saint was hauled back out by Delphine and a half dozen of his swords, boots dragging on the flagstones. But through the sodden curtains of his hair, his eyes ever remained on his sister, twin scars cutting down his cheek like teardrops, fangs bared in hatred absolute. Jean-Francois remained, standing on the shoreline in the ringing silence now, tome clutched in his hands. Meline stood at his side, her face drawn and bloodless. Brushing one golden curl from his flawless cheek, the historian stared across the water at that thing, that girl, that monster. She had retreated into the farthest, darkest corner of the cell, still trembling for fear of those flames. Her mouth was smeared with her brother's blood, dark hair splayed across her face like spider webs, black eyes fixed upon his. His voice rang clear in the dark.
"Why do you not do as he suggested, mademoiselle?"
The Laethi tilted her head in silent question. The historian gestured to the river.
"If the cup is broken, if the grail is gone, then so too is any hope of your salvation."
He shrugged.
"Why delay the inevitable? Why not simply end it? Steel rusts, ice melts."
She smoothed the hair back from her face, unshackled from that silver cage, lips rimmed in red. And though the cell was dark, still he could see her mouth, her chin, her throat, unscarred and unspoiled, flawless and whole below those ink-black eyes. "Stone endures," she hissed. The vampires watched each other across the water, fresh blood on her lips, on the stone, in the air. Jean-Francois's skin prickled, his eyes darkened, teeth sharp in his gums.
"There is far more to this tale than you are telling, Mademoiselle Castilla," he said quietly.
"There is always tomorrow, sinner," she murmured in reply. Jean-Francois straightened his cravat, heavy tome tucked at his elbow, slender hands wrapping about it, possessive and protective. Melinée hovered behind him, running her fingers feather-soft over his back as he stared Céline down.
"Do you require anything before I head to bed, mademoiselle?"
"Would you give it to us if we asked it?" He smiled then, cold and cruel.
"No."
Smile vanishing, he gave her the smallest of nods.
"Au revoir, Mademoiselle Castilla."
"Give our regards to your empress, little Marquis." Footsteps receded across the stone, along with the globe in Melinée's hand. The heavy doors slammed shut, plunging all into darkness. And in that dark, the last Laethi whispered, "Tell Margot we will see her soon."